Welcome back to the Millennial Classics, y'all. My name is Q, and on this podcast, we talk about the best and most memorable movies, books, and culture-changing events from our generation. This week, we are doing a book review, and we have a special guest, Nurse Pips, aka Piper. Welcome to the show. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's a good time every time.
For the folks who are listening, because this is podcast only, on my other YouTube channel, The Everyday Hero Show, I did an Everyday Hero interview with Nurse Pips. I think it's like 6-8 months ago now, almost a year ago, and it was a fantastic conversation. If you are a nurse, if you have any interest in NICU nursing, if you love babies, it's the podcast to listen to. But today we're talking about A Little Life. I always start these book reviews. I know it's podcast only, but I want to show you the cover of the book. And I want you to tell me, what did you think? First of all, when you heard about this book, was it a friend talking to you, telling you you should read it? Or did you just walk into the bookstore and pick it up? And when you did pick it up, what did you think of the cover?
Well, I originally heard about this book actually on TikTok. That's where I get most of my book recommendations.
BookTok is fantastic.
I saw this girl who was talking about it, and she said, this is a really good book if you feel like you just need a really good cry. I was like, you know, I'm not sure, but I kept seeing more people talking about this book. And I saw the cover, and I was kind of like, I don't know if it's for me. And the cover looks just agonizing.
It's obvious, right? Like, to you, that this is supposed to be Jude. But when I was looking at this, Jude is honestly a good looking man, right?
Yeah.
Because when I was reading through the book and the way they were describing Willem, the actor, if this is Jude and he's going through all of that agony, he's got a chin for like, but anyways, I saw that you also have a Kindle. So do you actually have the like physical book, or is it Kindle for you?
I do not have the physical book. I actually don't even have it anymore because I read it from the library on my Kindle.
Because you're a smart lady.
Yeah, I put it on hold, and then I got it shortly after my grandfather passed. I was like, you know, this would be a good time for one of those really good emotional books, I feel like. And it was, I knew it was really long. Why not? Now's the time to start it and see what happens. And so I started reading it. But yeah, I think they described Jude as like being, just having this like look about him that was like he was really good looking, even with his trauma.
Like, I always say spoiler alert and all of this stuff, but I did want to say, just from the outstart, like, this book talks a whole lot about sexual assault. It talks a whole lot about like physical abuse, domestic violence? Yeah, domestic violence. I mean, you will start crying probably like after the first part. It's like tears from part two all the way through the end. It is deep and it is heavy and it is hard to get through. So just a warning out front. But I do want to jump into the actual plot, and then we can talk about the details so you know who exactly we're talking about when we mention Jude and Willem and all those folks. What and who do we live for? And how much do love and friendship weigh against pain and suffering? Those are the big questions in A Little Life by, and please bear with me with the pronunciation of the author's name, Hanya Hanagar. Hanya Hanagihara's second novel. Do you think you know how to pronounce her name?
My best guess would be, I knew a girl who was named Anna with an H.
Oh,
so
okay.
it might be like Hanya or Anya Yanagihara.
She is a magician with a pen.
Yes.
So those are the questions that asking in her second novel. A Little Life is about the four friends in New York City. The story begins when they're in their mid-20s and ends when they're in their mid-50s. There's an aspiring actor, Willem, a moody painter, JB, a quiet architect, Malcolm, and the brilliant lawyer, Jude, the protagonist of the book. So we are going to go through the plot, but we're going to spend the entire book review after the plot talking about these characters, starting at Lisbonard Street. Jude and Willem, having recently graduated from college, embark on a quest to find a shared apartment in Soho, facing challenges due to their lack of guarantors?
Yep.
Like the lease signing folks. They eventually settle in a modest apartment on Lisbonard Street, despite its less than ideal condition, marking a new chapter in their lives.
This period is also significant for the other half of the group. Malcolm is on his way to becoming a respected architect, while JB's artistic talents begin to shine as he paints his friends. However, JB's behavior can be troublesome, especially when he teases Malcolm about his identity and background. The dynamics across the four friends set the stage for the unfolding narrative filled with complexities and deep-seated issues.
We move on to the postman. Years later, the friends find themselves advancing in their respective careers. Willem lands a role in a feature film while Jude works at a prestigious law firm. However, Jude is increasingly troubled by severe leg pain and harrowing flashbacks of his childhood in a monastery. These memories include his time with Brother Luke, a monk who was both a confidant and an abuser. Every time I read Brother Luke's name, I get like shivers down my spine. That dude,
yeah.
When we start talking about it, we'll get there. We'll get there.
Jude's life is further complicated by the social worker Anna, who cared for him post-accident and encouraged him to pursue higher education. Despite her support, Jude remains guarded about his past, only offering his friends a fabricated story about a drunk driving accident. JB, in his typical fashion, gives Jude the moniker the Postman, alluding to his perceived lack of identity. The group's dynamic is strained when JB, in a thoughtless act, exhibits a painting of Jude that he was asked not to share.
We move over to Green Street. As Willem and Jude's careers flourish, they move to more upscale living spaces. Willem's acting career takes off, leading him to prestigious roles, while Jude excels as a litigator. Willem's relationship with a woman named Philippa prompts him to give Jude space, leading to his move to a luxurious Green Street apartment. Despite the breakup with Philippa, largely due to her discomfort with his bond with Jude, Willem finds his way back to living with Jude.
During these years, the friends face various challenges. Jude's mental health deteriorates, his traumatic flashbacks intensify, and his self-harm worsens. Malcolm, meanwhile, finds success and happiness in his personal life. In contrast, JB spirals into drug addiction, feeling alienated from the group, especially after his insensitive portrayal of Jude's disability. Harold, Jude's former law professor, becomes an important figure in Jude's life, offering mentorship and eventually adopting him, giving Jude a sense of family he never had.
We move over to Caleb. Is right. That sigh is an understatement. I mean, Caleb is a monster. Celebrating Willem's 40th birthday marks a significant milestone for the group, with each member achieving success in their fields. However, JB remains estranged due to past conflicts. Amidst this, Jude longs for a romantic connection and meets Caleb, a charismatic fashion executive. The relationship quickly devolves into a nightmare, with Caleb showing his true abusive nature.
Caleb's treatment of Jude is brutal, leaving him physically and emotionally scarred. This relationship reopens Jude's old wounds, reminding him of his traumatic past with Brother Luke. The abuse reaches a climax when Caleb viciously assaults Jude, leading to a period of intense regression for him. Harold, ever the supportive figure in Jude's life, is devastated upon discovering Jude's condition, but respects his wish to keep the ordeal from Willem.
And then we get towards the end of the book. You guys, this is the last piece of the plot summary. Willem, grappling with his feelings for Jude, confronts the reality of their relationship. As they navigate the complexities of a romantic partnership, Jude's history of self-harm and traumatic experiences strain their bond. Despite these challenges, they find moments of joy and understanding, with their friends supporting them along the way.
Their relationship is tested further when Jude's self-harming escalates. After a severe incident, they have a major confrontation, leading to a deeper understanding and a new arrangement in their relationship. Jude begins to open up about his past, sharing his experiences with Caleb, the monastery, Brother Luke, and the counselors at the boys' home in Montana. Harold continues to provide unwavering support, helping Jude navigate these challenging revelations and their impact on his relationship with Willem.
Do you think it would be smart for us to talk about what happened at the end, or do you think we should not mention it for those who actually want to read the book?
That's a really good question, because it was there was a really big twist.
At the end,
however, yeah. I feel like that big twist is a big part of it, because that's like what...
I mean, we have to talk about
it. Stabbed me right here. At that point, I was just done with the book.
Yeah.
I was like, I am done. So I feel like we have to talk about it.
We have to talk about Malcolm and Willem. And it's just literally just when Jude is, I don't want to say finally finding his stride, because it's hard to tell if he would ever get to a place where he's like mentally healthy.
Yeah.
But he's like, it feels like he's finally getting into stride. Willem and Malcolm end up getting into a car accident, and both of them end up passing away, which
yes.
is insanely, insanely hard to think about when you're reading the book, because the entire time reading the book, you're just waiting on pins and needles. When is Jude gonna pass away? When is Jude gonna do the self-harming to the point where he gets the like where it's actual suicide and not just an attempt? And then it ends up
Yes.
being that two of his other friends end up passing away, which just it's fucking insane. It's crazy. It's crazy. You guys, look, this book is thick. I keep
It's
saying
very
look
thick.
because I'm used to doing videos. 800 page book, right? It's
Yeah.
huge. It's humongo. So getting through the stories, there are a lot of flashbacks, and it is a lot of development to get to the end. But how did you enjoy the read? Did you like go into it and out of it? Were you like a page turner for you? Could you not stop reading? Or were you like, this is getting old? I feel like sometimes I felt like it was too much. Like I had to take a
Yes.
few days off from reading this book because it
Yes.
was too much. How did you feel reading through?
I tell people that this book was like dashing my hopes at every turn. It was like I would get a little bit of hope because I'm a pretty optimistic person. And so I would be like, oh, yay, this one thing is going right. And then dashed. And I would just be so angry that something else had gone wrong. And then it felt like it was a very, very heavy book, but it was also confusing because there were so many characters that you're trying
To
to
keep in,
get straight. And I don't do well when characters' names start with the same letter. So like JB and Jude got me really confused for the first half, well, first quarter of the book. But I felt like it was super well written and the
Exactly.
characters were well developed. I mean, this book was a person's whole life, basically. So I understand why it was 800 plus
Oh,
pages,
exactly.
but
Exactly. And
it was very heavy.
in a way, it was like, I would say mainly Jude and Willem, right? But like for those
Yes.
two specifically, it was two people's entire lives. You definitely needed this, like the length and the depth to really feel for these people. The thing that got me, the thing that was hard for me, just the flashbacks, because you would have entire chapters, entire parts, basically be a backstory on Jude. And every time I knew we were going back to Jude's past, it's like just dread, right? Because you're
Yes.
just waiting for the worst thing to happen. And then the thing that happens is worse than you imagine. It's worse
Yes.
than you imagine. Because it's such a character, like, deep book, we are going to focus on the characters, like I said. Do you want to start with a specific character, or do you not mind how we go through these people?
I don't really mind how we go through it. I was going to say that another thing that I found hard about this book is that some of the chapters would start off with just in first person.
Oh,
Well,
yeah.
not first person, but it would say he thought this and this and this and this, and it would go on like that for a page or two before I could figure out who we
Who's,
were talking about because they're all he's. And so I was like, wait, is this Willem? Like, who is this? Who am I right now? Am I Jude? Am I Willem? Am I JB? Am I Malcolm? Am I Harold at one point?
Exactly,
And
exactly.
so I felt like that was the only thing that like really made me probably added to my confusion with this book to start, because a lot of the chapters you would get at least a page or two in before you'd figure out who you are in this chapter. They weren't titled like with their names or
Yeah.
anything.
It took me a
Well,
while to really get into it because in the beginning I was like, this is about like four boring people. I'm not, they weren't
yeah.
boring, but like four regular folks living, trying to live the New York dream,
Well,
right?
I went into it blind. I didn't know anything at all what it was about
Oh, I see.
whatsoever. And so I started it off and I was like, okay, cool. It's about four college dudes. Like, this could be a pretty cool
Good time.
book. Good time. Sounds good. Like, they're in New York City. I love New York. I'd love to hear about it, And I was like, this seems kind of cool. And then things just started happening. And I was like, what
What
is
is
happening
happening
right
right now?
now?
So the way I'd like to go through it is because some characters are not minor, but like I said, the book is mainly about Jude and Willem. It's mainly about Jude, and Willem's a big part of Jude's life. But I'd like to go through some of the characters that are a focus but aren't like the main story. So we'll
Yeah.
start out with Harold, and his
Okay.
quick description is: Harold is a law professor who becomes a father figure to Jude. He is characterized by his compassion, wisdom, and the deep desire to provide Jude with the love and care he needs. Harold's role is pivotal in offering a contrast to Jude's abusive past. This dude is a law professor. He sees like potential in Jude. He's like, Jude, you can be fucking like a Supreme Court justice. You're that dude, right? And then Jude ends up being like working for like some finance law company, which yes. makes Harold feel some type of way. But at the end of the day, Harold legitimately adopts Jude. The hard thing about Harold is Harold had a son in the past that ended up dying, and his son's death actually broke up his first marriage. So right. he gets remarried. He's still a law professor. He finds Jude, a person that's in deep, deep need of a father figure. It's beautiful to see.
That was one of my favorite parts, I think, was when Talk it finally me. All went through.
Talk to
and
me.
And he
Talk
was he was fully adopted. I was like, I loved how this book went through several things that are not the norm, because it helps bring about like that becoming the norm, like being adopted even when you're, how old was he? He was like 28 or 30.
Yep.
I think when he was officially adopted, and you know, you don't hear about that a lot. And I was like, oh good. Like finally he gets to have someone to call family.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just in like a, hey, you can call me your dad type of way. It was literally by paperwork.
Exactly.
We are giving you our estate. You know, we want you to be with us and all of that. And I thought that that was really special.
Just thinking about these relationships, it's not something that men specifically focus on. When I think of a man's story or like a book about men, I honestly, most of the time, I'm waiting for the action to happen. I'm waiting for like the mystery. But in real life, these things aren't real. The monsters are other human beings. Like the good people, like the savior are other human beings. And Harold really comes out this book like the guy. Like when you said it's so heartwarming, because throughout the book, even before Harold adopts him, they like very, very close. And Harold invites Jude and the crew to his house for Thanksgiving, for Christmas. It continues on throughout the book. And it's like a mainstay. So every time you go back to Harold, it's like, okay, good. There's going to be some peace in the next few chapters.
Yes, right? At least for this week, they'll be right? Okay.
And like what you said is so right. Like the idea that there are folks that get adopted in adulthood is unheard of, but it feels so real. Let me ask you this. I don't know if it was more for Harold or more for Jude, but it was truly perfect. Who, like, I don't want to say who won out, but do you think that Harold was doing it because like Harold needed it? Or do you think Harold thought Jude needed it, so I'm going to adopt him?
I don't think that Harold was trying to do it for Jude. I don't think he was doing it as if, you know, Jude needs somebody. I think because Jude always kind of gave off that persona of, I don't need anybody and I can do everything on my own until I just physically cannot. Harold was doing it more to help heal himself, but it could have also been kind of a mixed factor. So I think Harold did it kind of to heal himself. And it kind of, I think, alluded to that a little bit towards the end when they were talking about his other son. But yeah, I think it was kind of healing for both of them, really.
Like it really was two puzzle pieces, like just perfect fitting, because you're right. I don't think human beings make decisions like that. And that's another good thing about this book. Like the decisions people make in this book, sometimes there's not any decision made in this book where I thought that's ridiculous. That would never happen in real life. But some of it is like monstrous. Like if a human being would do this, they truly deserve to be under the jail, like put to death, like horrible human beings. Right.
Yeah.
But the decisions from the characters that we follow, none of them seem insane. It feels super realistic. And just the decision-making process of all of these folks really put you in the mind of folks who are going through hell, specifically Jude. I do want to read you a quote that I had marked down, because this is one of my favorite quotes from the book. And just to give you a little context, Jude is over Harold's house. Harold has like a mug or a piece of something that his son made prior to him dying. And then Jude accidentally drops it and breaks it. Jude is freaking out and he's losing his mind. He writes Harold this truly, truly kind letter and apologizes profusely. And then this is Harold's response. Dear Jude, Harold wrote, thank you for your beautiful, if unnecessary, note. I appreciate everything in it. You're right. That mug means a lot to me, but you mean more. So please stop torturing yourself. If I were a different kind of person, I might say that this whole incident is a metaphor for life in general. Things get broken and sometimes they get repaired. And in most cases, you realize that no matter what gets damaged, life rearranges itself to compensate for your loss, sometimes wonderfully. I just love that because it's so true. Life is fucking crazy. And sometimes the worst things happen, like you losing a kid, which I can't imagine. But then Harold finds someone that he truly wants to like mold and shape and give whatever he has built in this world over to, right? He finds Jude and he's like, I love you so much. That mug meant so much to me because it was a piece of someone I lost, but you came into my life and you mean so much more. And Jude, when we get to his past, we'll talk about it, but Jude has never felt, no one in Jude's life prior to meeting his friends and prior to having Harold as a father figure had loved him without asking him to do something for him. Most of the time, those things being horrible. Harold opening up and saying, don't worry about the mug. I love that. I love that. I love it so much.
Yeah, he does a really good job at overcoming his own pain in order to make Jude feel accepted and point out that like things are things. And, you know, like most kids learn at some point in their childhood that accidents happen and you can't always stop an accident from happening, but, you know, you move on. And so I think that that was what really made the turning point for them.
So that is the only character that I wanted to talk about that is not part of the big four. Are there any other characters that you wanted to mention before we get into the friend group?
I was trying to think even of what
if there's
all the
any
characters
other characters to
are
even talk.
Now,
I know.
But
I know.
Think that they're
the plus ones outside of the friend group really don't get mentioned much.
No.
No,
there's too much going on with all four of them.
Okay, let's get into the friend group and we'll start out with Malcolm. Malcolm is an architect and one of Jude's closest friends. He is often depicted as being somewhat on the periphery of the core friend group, struggling with his own identity and career path. Malcolm, in the beginning of the book, honestly, he doesn't even know if he's gay or straight in the beginning of the book, right? And that's weird to say, but like he's literally questioning his sexuality. He's questioning the fact that he's half black, half white. He's questioning the fact that he's living with his three friends, most of them that who don't have money, and he comes from a lot of wealth. He's questioning everything about his identity, but he finds a way through. He finds a thing that he loves. He becomes an architect, and he is, like I just described, he's a friend, but he's on the periphery. How did you feel? What did you think about Malcolm? Did you like him? Was he a character that you enjoyed reading about?
I think Malcolm did not get enough attention in this book because it felt like he had, like, he was a part of the main four at the beginning, and I didn't know who the main character was going to be at the beginning. I was just like, oh, it's about all four of these guys. And then people started to kind of get talked about less and less, and it was revealed more who the main story was actually about. But I felt like Malcolm didn't get enough love in this. He was just kind of a side character that after a little bit would just pop in and out, and it'd be like, oh yeah, here he comes. Oh, and by the way, he's married. And by the way, he's got this. And oh yeah, now he's a successful architect. It wasn't right. like the other friends, you kind of saw more of like their struggles to get their careers going and that kind of thing. And he was more just like, he would pop in and be like, oh yeah, life update, and then
life
pop
update
back out.
That's such a great way to describe it, because I loved that dynamic where JB was being an asshole, and we're about to talk about JB next, being an asshole to Malcolm about, you're not truly black enough, you don't know what being black is. In the beginning of the book, we leave Malcolm off not knowing if he's gay or straight, not understanding his identity when it comes to race, not knowing what he wants to do for a career. And the next time you see him, he knows his career, he's having a girlfriend that he's questioning marrying, and you're like, wait a second.
What just happened?
Yeah, we had like 200 pages on like Willem's feeling as an actor. Like, can we talk about Malcolm for 5 minutes here, please?
Yes. And that was the other thing that got me about this book that was a little out there, was that all four of them had wildly successful careers.
Oh yeah.
It's not like they just, you know, did okay for themselves. These were men who became like millionaires in New York City. And I was like, okay, I wish I had a key into this friendship group so I could also become a millionaire. I mean, wow.
But just more on Malcolm. The questions that he was asking himself, because I wanted so much more on like him questioning his identity, I love that aspect. And I feel like we missed something there that we could have dug deep into. Because
Even just as much as JB. I mean, JB kind of faded out too, but we got a lot more of his backstory than we did Malcolm. Malcolm was kind of more like, it seemed to me more like the vanilla character, just like kind of there to be like, yeah, there is a fourth one to break up, you know, the teaming up on each other kind of dynamic that can happen with three people. But he was not there for any greater purpose, it seemed, in the storyline anyway.
Now, I don't want to say he was being used because in the book, in the story, he's actually the one doing like the going out of his way to help both Willem and Jude. But I felt like he was being used because every time Willem or Jude wanted an update to their apartment or to their
Yes.
house, it's like, get Malcolm over here to build us something nice. And I'm
And
like,
that's the only
come
time you would hear from him. And that's when he would give you
Exactly.
his life update. And then it'd be like, okay, bye, Malcolm. See you next time we want to renovate.
Exactly. Like for real though. Like he would show up and then they would talk about how the bathroom should be set up. I'm like, come on. Give the man a little respect. But that is Malcolm. He is the one that is probably, like I said, the periphery of the friend group. JB. My goodness, JB. So JB is an artist known for his vibrant personality and sometimes self-centered behavior. You could say that again. His character often provides a stark contrast to Jude in terms of demeanor and outlook on life. Just a little bit more about him. He struggles in the beginning with his career, but it's not that long because he has like a whole like a showing, like artist showing exhibition or whatever you call it. And like, I don't want to say the museum, but like wherever they do art shows. He had like a full-on art show in the beginning, and that's when he did the painting of Jude that he promised Jude he wouldn't do. And that's where all the trouble between Jude and JB started.
And Willem too, because
Oh yeah, because Willem
Willem
is
was
Jude's.
so close to Jude. I felt like I thought at this point like it was going to be like okay, two and two, like Malcolm and JB were going to side together, Willem and Jude were going to side together, but that's not really what happened. And
No.
that's where Malcolm just kind of fell somewhere in the middle and then just fluttered away.
He didn't pick a side, and because he didn't pick a side, no one paid attention to him. The thing about JB, he's like, you know, like you think of like that Hollywood self-centered mindset, and JB like personifies that because he has a decent career, but he's like, fuck this shit. Jude is the superstar lawyer. Willem is the superstar actor, and Malcolm is building freaking mansions in Rome and Paris and whatever. I want to be a superstar artist. So he gets really bothered by the fact that he's successful, but not as successful as he thought he should be, which is wild to say. And then he gets deep into drugs. And then because he gets so deep into the drugs, he ends up in the situation where, in the book, the way they describe it sounds so painful. But I did want to just the specific moment that truly broke up the friendship. Jude and Willem go to the house to try to stop JB from doing more drugs and hanging out with some bad friends. And while JB's coming down off of a high, trying to get more drugs, he ends up doing this reenactment of what Jude looks like. And Jude is, throughout the book, crippled. He's handicapped. And he does this really sad, horrible imitation of what Jude looks like and walks around like. And that truly breaks up the friend group in a deep, deep, real way that I don't know that truly recovers. Yeah, talk to me about JB. What did you think of his progression through the story?
I felt like it was a very strange concept that he is so concerned about being so successful when he comes from, which is probably why, because he comes from a very successful family. And, you know, he didn't necessarily need anything. He just wanted to be successful, rather than just doing art because he liked art. He was doing it because he wanted the attention and the fame and the status. But I feel like he was struggling with his own problems a lot. And I think that Jude and Willem, because Jude had so many problems of his own, I think they didn't really have a lot of patience to deal with someone else having any issues kind of like that and bringing more of that into their friendship. I feel like Jude was so much, not that I want to say he was a handful, but he required a lot of attention, a lot of help sometimes, and then also was just mean to people. And I think that JB was just had a momentary, I mean, not that it was right what he did, but I think he had a momentary lapse in his ability to hold it all together and not lash out at his friends. And I think all of them being kind of sort of teaming up on him probably didn't help the situation, which
Say it, Piper.
Is,
it's unfair. It's bullshit. Look, I don't want to, look, Jude has a horrible backstory, but Jude never shared that information with JB and the friend group. Jude doesn't know where the fucking his disability came from. JB's understanding of the Jude's handicap was it because of a drunk driving accident. So you can't blame JB for not tiptoeing around something that he's been around his entire friendship. And then, like, he's high on drugs. He's trying to get drugs. He's fucked up in the head. And then he lashes out in one of his worst moments. And all of a sudden, the friend group that's been best friends since however long is over. I think it's bullshit. I truly think what they did to JB, yes, he's self-centered, but you knew who JB was.
And he did profusely apologize. And
constantly.
Tried
and they were so
to make
hard.
It better. And I feel like, I feel like they never truly forgave him, which I could understand it being hard to forgive him, but I feel like everyone makes a mistake here or there. So I feel like they could have tried harder to work past it, but I think that Jude had too many issues to even deal with any of that.
Breaking up with a friend or friend breakup is so difficult because a relationship breaking up, I don't want to say a little bit more clear cut, but it's like when you're breaking up with someone that you are with, like you guys are not hooking up anymore, you guys are not dating anymore, so it feels like that's it. When you break up with a friend, it's weird because my friends are your friends and your friends are my friends, and like you kind of force people to pick sides, and it did, and then everything changes because when everyone is together, there's always tension. Friends breaking up, it's such a hard thing. Like another thing about JB, because he had this like aggrandizing sense or belief in himself, which was like otherworldly, he also was obsessed with the life, with the college lifestyle. Throughout the book, it kept on saying things like he wanted to be back in college. Even when he became successful, he was the one that was doing all of these big parties, which got him into the drugs. He was the one that wanted all of his friends to come back. But I feel like his desire to be the center of attention 24/7 is also what was very hard for Jude and Willem to come to grips with.
I feel like in their friend group, it was kind of, at least in Willem's world, it was that Jude was always kind of the center of that of that world, and that they should be focusing, you know, all their extra time, all their extra effort on helping Jude. I mean, a friendship like that was almost guaranteed to fail, because you can't have someone who requires a lot of attention, doesn't necessarily want it, but requires special attention, and then someone who craves all the attention. You can't have those two people be a good friendship for very long, I would think.
Oh, Piper, that's such a good insight. I didn't even look at it that way. There's only so much attention you can give. And JB's like, I want it all. Give it to me right now.
Yeah, he's like, everyone put your eyes on me. And then like Jude over there just, you know, bangs into something. And the people are all looking at him. And he's like, no, it's me over here.
It's me. Oh, yeah. JB is gay in this book. And he had feelings, or he was just attracted to Willem. Willem's just described as this like really hot dude, right? He ends up being an actor, right? He's this really hot dude. They end up kissing once in the book. And they was like, oh, this just doesn't feel right. But then at the same time, when JB finds out that Willem and Jude end up being together, he does feel some type of way. So like, I'm not defending JB. What I'm saying is the reaction and how long it took them to even pretend to forgive or like at least come back together, I thought was way too much for the one major mistake JB did. But at the same time, JB is a lot. He's a lot to deal with.
Between that and then being stacked with him having already betrayed Jude in the past, I think is what really put the knife in their friendship.
Before we move on to Willem, even in the beginning of the book, you're right, the first major betrayal, JB went around taking pictures of them and then he ended up painting those pictures of the friend group. And JB told Jude straight up, Jude doesn't like taking his picture, getting his picture taken, and he definitely doesn't want his face to be in like a large print in front of hundreds of people for JB's exhibition. He's taking the picture and Jude tells JB, I do not want this picture part of your exhibition. Do not make it part of your exhibition. Please don't. And JB promised Jude whatever you veto is not going to be a part of it. And then he straight up just lies. So like
yes.
now the more that I talk about it, the more fucked up JB does seem. Like he...
Yes, yes. Because he did getting Jude to agree to some pictures.
Yeah.
But then the one picture that he ended up betraying was when Jude was in the middle of one of his episodes.
Exactly.
Or had just was just recovering from one of his episodes. And that was the one when he took the picture. And, you know, yeah, he basically at that point threw his friendship under the bus to try to get more fame and attention.
Exactly. I think that's what most, especially like truly deep friendships and relationships and people you love in your life, it's never just one thing that they do wrong. It's always like you keep doing this thing. And I, at some point, it's too much, right?
Yes.
Moving on to Willem. Willem is like, I would say like, you know, protagonist, if Jude is A1, Willem is like A2. Like he's just like, he's right there. Willem is a kind, sensitive, and devoted friend, especially to Jude. His character is marked by a deep sense of empathy and understanding, qualities that make him an anchor in Jude's turbulent life. Willem starts his journey as an aspiring actor, and he is rooming with Jude. His early life is pretty tough. Both his parents die like a few years after his only sibling, his brother, ends up dying. And his brother, prior to Willem coming to college, his brother is actually sick. I forget what the disease he had. Willem was basically the caretaker because his parents were super, like, not emotional at all. His brother dies. His parents end up dying within the same year. And then he's basically all alone. And then he just, like, attracted to Jude. And he doesn't know if him being attracted to Jude has something to do with his brother. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But anyways, Willem has this great acting career. He's like just having sex with all of these different people. He ends up having a girlfriend here and there. Philippa is the one that lasts the longest, but they end up breaking up because of his relationship with Jude. And then he finally ends up being with Jude until he passes away in that car accident.
Willem was like, he was probably my favorite character.
Mm-hmm.
I loved him. I feel like his personality didn't really fit a superstar actor. Other than that, like if you just put the whole acting career aside and just, you know, he goes off and travels for work a lot and makes a lot of money. I feel like other than that, it didn't really affect the rest of his life, it sounded like. He just kept soaring through and doing his thing. But I felt like he didn't even know how deep his regard was for Jude, even though everyone else did. I feel like Willem just let it, like he did not know how deep his feelings were for Jude for a really long time. And I think Philippa was probably the one of the sparks that started him questioning, you know, what are my feelings actually for this person? Because before that, he was just like, Jude's my friend. He wasn't thinking like, why am I willing to give up an entire movie in order to come and help him? He doesn't put those pieces together until quite later in the book and in their lives. I think they were like 48 or something when they finally
elderly.
Yes.
Elderly.
Not elderly.
they were not young bucks at the time when they decided, God, Piper, we got to do this more often. What you said was perfect because I remember reading it and thinking in my head, this dude is crazy. Because Philippa, there was this one part of the book where Philippa's describing when we get married and get older, we're going to have a farmhouse and we're going to be like, it's going to be perfect and our kids are going to be running around. And then Philippa's done. And then what's it called? Willem's like, and Jude's going to be at the
in
dining
the garage.
Table. And Philippa's like, wait, what are you talking about? This is our fantasy dream life. Why is homie hanging out at the garage?
Yes. It's kind of like, have you ever watched that show Friends? It's like when Monica and Chandler are moving into their house and they're like, we'll have an apartment over the garage for Joey to grow old in. Like, that's kind of how Willem was.
Yes.
And I was like, that's perfect. And she just didn't get it. She was like, why?
Yeah. Why is your friend living in our fantasy? That's when she was like, so I'm competing with your friend and I'm not close. There's not a competition. I'll never be in your heart what Jude is to you. And Philippa noticed it way earlier than Willem himself noticed it. And that was the part of the book where I was like, damn, he actually might be in love. And this was way even before the relationship started happening, right? He almost is portrayed in the book. He's like the shining light, like the perfect character. You know, like he's handsome, he's good looking, he's patient, he's empathetic. He's like, he's caring, but shit gets hard. shit gets really hard once they are in a relationship. Willem and Jude can't have sex. Not can't. Don't have sex because of Jude's history. That was a big part, and the way they talked about that was super sensitive. I truly appreciated the honesty of that portion of the book because that is such a hard thing,
I
right?
loved that part.
Because like if we're gonna be adults and be honest with each other, the difference between my best friend and the person I'm with is the sex, right? Like I'm not sleeping with my best friend, but the person I'm sleeping with is my partner, my romantic partner. With Jude having such a horrible traumatic history, like if you haven't read the book, I might sound crazy, but like in the book, it took Jude months before he would get naked in front of Willem after they were in a relationship. I think it was like 13 or 14 months before they finally had sex, and then they had to stop having sex because Jude finally told Willem, I can't do this anymore. So Willem was as patient as a person can be in that aspect. How did you feel about that?
I loved this part of the book because I thought that it did a really good job at, like, when I was talking about before, about things that aren't talked about, like being
Exactly.
adopted as an adult.
Exactly.
This is one of those things that isn't talked about, which is that there are relationships where people are life partners and they don't have sex. Like that is a thing that happens. It's just not talked about a lot. And I thought that it was really, really cool that they explored that in this book and that they basically agreed to have a relationship and be there for each other 110%, be each other's person without the sex being a part of it. It finally like released Jude of finally having a person that he did not have to give something
Exactly.
to. Like that was the final
Exactly.
playing card in his entire life of like, someone always wants something from me. Okay, well, if they love me, I have to earn it. Like I have to do something in order for them to love me. And I felt like this was finally the point where he was like, oh my gosh, someone really does love me without me having to do anything for them. It really opened the possibility for people who read the book to be like, wow, that is a real thing and that can happen. Like, you don't always have to have sex to be in a
In a
partnership.
romantic, yep. For whatever reason, right? So it could be erectile dysfunction. It could be it whatever the reason for you for the a partnership not having
Could be
sex.
95 years old.
Exactly. It could be whatever the reason is, but the just the love and the care and the thought that went into in describing the relationship between them was wonderful. And it was a situation where Willem was having sex with people outside the relationship that Jude was happy for Willem to do. I don't know if it happened for a very long time, but it was happening, which made the relationship a whole lot like easier on both people's part. Because Willem's like, I am a person who wants to have sex, and if I want to have sex, my options are to cheat or to, I hate to say force, but put Jude in a situation where he has to give sex. And that's the last thing that Willem wants to do, right?
Yes,
I
and
mean,
I thought that that was so very honorable that he was not
yes.
willing to make him do something that is uncomfortable. And even in the slightest, like he constantly asked him, does this make you uncomfortable? And even if he would say no, he'd be like, well, do you want to? Because
Exactly.
if you don't want
Exactly.
to, then we
And
shouldn't be doing it, period. It's not just, does it make you uncomfortable? When Willem was going out and having sex with other people, it was always a woman. I don't know if it was like to him that wasn't quite as much cheating because it was a different gender. I'm not sure if that was kind of his thought process, but I did find that to be an interesting detail.
see, this is why I need to have these conversations. I didn't even pick up on that. Of course it was they had they there has to be something there because that is such a good point. In the book, it does mention a lot of guys he had sex with throughout his time in Hollywood and abroad, but he never had a relationship with another man. So maybe he was bisexual but leaned more towards, I don't even know how that works, but I love that you noticed it. I know this is wild, but I do want to go back to his past. I don't know where he gets all of this giving from, all of this care and empathy from. I don't know if you noticed anything else from his childhood or from his upbringing. His parents, I think they said from like Sweden or Finland, some one of those Nordic countries, they come to America. His dad is like this honest to the bone farmer. Like the one time his dad gets interviewed in like a newspaper or something, one of the reporters asks his dad, "Are you like, how do you like working as the farmer of the owner of this farm?" And his dad is like, "No, I'm not the owner of the farm. I'm a leaser or whatever." Like just crystallizing the fact that his dad wouldn't lie about a single thing. But at the same time, his parents were super dejected. They didn't show love. He was not upset that his parents didn't give him all the love and kisses. He was upset that his parents didn't give his brother the love and kisses because his brother was like truly ill and truly sick. Willem was the person who, after school, he would run home to be with his brother. And then when Willem went off to college, that's when his brother passed away. And his parents literally told him when his brother was sick in bed, do not fly home. It's only going to make it worse when you leave because his brother's going to start crying and not like whatever. His mom did lose a kid or two kids prior to both Willem and his brother being born. So I don't know if that is like after losing a kid or two, you stop sharing so much love. I don't know what it was, but what did you think of his past? What did you think of his history?
I'm not sure if it was like maybe never was given that much love himself, and therefore he wanted to see someone else experience it. He wanted someone else to get all of that attention. And it was almost like the opposite of JB, basically, where he was raised in a very, a home with a lot of loss, and his parents may have lost that ability to express love because they had done it and had lost several already, and they may have just shut down, until they thought that there might be a point that was like people who are experiencing loss in pregnancy, like there's a point that they get to where they're at like the age of viability or something, and they can kind of take a breath because they're like, oh, we've passed this one mark, it's all going to be okay, more than likely from here on out. But with a child, there's never that point. So, and it's possible that his parents were just constantly holding their breath, like, okay, what's the next thing that's going to happen? What's the next thing, And they didn't want to invest time and energy into what they thought they might lose. I think that Willem just had more trauma than he thought that he did. I think he kind of described his story as being like, oh, it's pretty normal except for this. So I think that he
That was a
kind
big
of,
except.
yeah, except I lost some siblings here and there. So yeah, that kind of sucked, and continue on and become a movie star. But I feel like he kind of just tried to sweep all his own stuff under the rug. But I think that him and Jude, I feel like that was what kind of helped him start healing. I feel like a lot of this book was just a lot of people with trauma who were finding ways to cope with that trauma in each other. Willem was finding a way to cope with the loss of his brother by being with Jude. Harold was finding a way to cope with the loss of his son by adopting Jude.
When Willem dies in the car accident, the description of Willem's last moments is seeing his brother in the light. You see, you're about to die, you see the light, you go towards the light. And for Willem, the light, it wasn't Jude, it was his brother. That's what he saw. Once he got into the car accident, he wanted to take care of his brother. He wanted his brother to have the best life his brother could possibly have. His parents kind of got into the way of that, but it was also life. He was off to college. And then he has Jude, and he's so protective of Jude. Like a lot of the stuff that I was like mad at the friend group for treating JB was mainly Willem, because Willem was like, you fucked up because you were mean to Jude. I'm not going to be a friend. So Willem was the one that was like the angry one towards JB because JB attacked or made fun of Jude. He was so protective of Jude. He wanted to just protect Jude and have Jude have the best life ever, very similarly to the way he felt about his brother. I don't want to say I thought it was too perfect, but he was kind of a great character.
In several characters, not just him, but in several characters that they, you kind of get the internal monologue of them like thinking about or struggling with their sexuality. And I thought that that was really interesting because it was like three of the four main guys, if I'm not mistaken, that were kind of having this internal struggle a little bit of just thinking like, well, which way, you know, who do I like? I don't know. I haven't even thought about it. I haven't been there. Like, was a total mystery to
Oh, yeah.
everybody. No idea. And that's a big driving factor of the book. But also, Willem kind of, you know, thought he was always going to be with women, and then Jude, and then, you know, he just like was like, I don't really know. I'm somewhere in between. And it was very interesting that almost none of them ever gave themselves a label. They always just would
Fell for the
just be
person
with the
they
person.
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I thought
Yeah.
that that was very interesting.
When you see someone that you're attracted to, you're not thinking in my head, this is a straight way of thinking. This is in your head, you're thinking that's an attractive person. I want to be with that person,
Yep.
right? You're not thinking in your head, this is a bisexual way. You're thinking this is someone I'm attracted to and I'm going to go after this person. So I
Yep.
loved how, yet they were talking about what my sexuality is, but they never, it wasn't like about the label. And finally, let's get to Jude, the main, the protagonist of this, of the book, and probably the saddest story in any book I've ever read. But just bear with us here. Jude St. Francis is the central figure of A Little Life, characterized by his intelligence, professional success as a lawyer, and enduring the aftermath of an incredibly traumatic childhood and adolescence. His character is a poignant exploration of the long-term effects of trauma. His early life, Jude's early life, is shrouded in mystery, marked by absence and neglect. He's abandoned as an infant and grows in a monastery under the care of Brother Luke. Life at the monastery, Jude's time at the monastery, is characterized by severe physical and emotional abuse from the monks, further exacerbating his trauma. As a child, Jude is sexually abused by Brother Luke, who manipulates him under a guise of love and protection. This abuse forms the foundation of Jude's struggles with trust and self-worth. After escaping the monastery, Jude's life doesn't improve as he hoped. He faces further exploitation and abuse, including from a counselor named Dr. Traylor. That part of the book, like, broke me, Piper. Like, when I thought he was on his way to freedom, and this motherfucker, Dr. Traylor, comes and puts him in the basement, it like ripped me apart
Yes.
reading that, which deepens the traumas and the scars. These early experiences leave Jude with profound physical and psychological scars. He battles chronic pain, mobility issues, and engages in self-harm as a coping mechanism. Despite his traumatic past, Jude is highly successful academically and professionally, becoming a talented litigator. However, his personal life remains deeply affected by his past. Almost done here, you guys. Jude's relationships, especially with Willem, are complex, marked by his reluctance to disclose his past and his feelings of unworthiness. Throughout the novel, Jude's journey is one of coping and succumbing to his trauma, reflecting the profound and lasting impact of childhood abuse. Jude's story in A Little Life is a harrowing portrayal of trauma's enduring effects on an individual's life. It's a narrative of suffering and occasional moments of reprieve. And that part right there, occasional moments of reprieve, is so true,
Yeah.
primarily through the support of his friends, particularly Willem. Wherever you want to start, let's get into Jude.
I
Talk to me
feel
about you.
like Jude's entire story was just like dashing hopes. And it was also just like very in depth. I was surprised at how in depth his story was. But he was also kind of the mystery that kept me going through the entire book, because I probably wouldn't have finished this book if it wasn't written how it was, because he was such a mystery to me, especially like he was like a medical mystery to me, because I was like,
Yep.
well, what does he have? Like, they almost never go through specifics of what is wrong with him. It's just the signs and symptoms, which I kind of felt was refreshing, because that means that they're not necessarily labeling him with something immediately. It's just, this is what he suffers with, and this is, you know, what it does to his everyday life. It was like every single time there's a glimmer of hope, I was like, yay, something's finally going right for him. And then something would go wrong. You know, he'd get like when he met Caleb, and I was like, oh, he gets to be with this man that's so nice, and they like each other. And then boom, Caleb is a horrible person. And it was like constant. The whole book, I felt like, just did that to me over and over and over again until the very end.
Even when his life as we know it in present time throughout the book is going good, and you think you have a reprieve and Harold's about to adopt him, then they have an entire chapter or three chapters of his past that just tear you apart. The only other character that I was going to talk about throughout the book, but I just think it didn't have enough details and it's super intertwined with Jude, so we could talk about him now, was Andy. And Andy is Jude's doctor. Yeah, so they meet in college. Andy's like a medical student. Prior to Willem, Andy's the only person that's ever seen Jude naked, number one. Andy sees Jude naked a lot more, not, and I say naked, I'm only saying it because, like, a medically perspective, look at him and take care of him and mark how bad the cuts that he's constantly doing to himself are. Make sure that the wounds that are developing on his legs are not infected. So he's taking care of Jude in like a very medical way. It's not like a sexual thing. I'm just saying as a nurse, we're both nurses. You know how
Yes.
we have what's it, mandatory reporting? And you know how Andy threatens it a bunch of times? Do you
Yes.
think he should have reported? Like, do you like? I think he like. There were a couple of times where I like Andy. I think you have to sentence it. Like,
Yes.
you know, I don't. What was it called? An M1 hold? It's not an M1 hold. A 50, 5150, whatever it is. I think there were a couple of times that it was too much where Andy should have been like, okay, you need to go to a psych ward for whatever
Yes.
length of time. But before we continue with Jude, did you have anything to say about Andy?
I couldn't tell really what his motivations were, especially at the beginning, because he was just selflessly taking care of Jude, which I'm assuming was pretty much for free. And it's also traumatic for him to keep exposing himself to this person who he cannot help and he keeps wanting to help and he does not want help. And I felt like I couldn't figure out why he was subjecting himself to that for so long.
Yeah, and the thing I liked about Andy is like he was like, you know how you know those like experienced nurses who are tough with their patients, but you know that they care? That's what Andy was. Andy was super
Yes.
tough with as tough as you can get. The thing with Jude is if you push Jude too much, he would run away and you'd never hear from him again. He would run
Yep.
away and he would never talk to you again. He was just like, you cross the line where I can't give you what you're asking me, so I'm out of here. And Andy always got right to the line. There were a couple of times where I thought that Jude was just gonna leave Andy because Andy was asking Jude to do too much. And that's the crazy thing about being a healthcare provider. You can't force someone to let you help them. They have to help themselves for you to then give your guidance. So I thought Andy was a great at like, you know, character that was trying to do that in Jude's life.
He
Because
really was.
and at the same time, as much as I'm saying there's a couple of times that we should have sent him to a facility, we are forgetting the fact that Jude was an expert lawyer. If Jude took Andy to court, was just like, no, I'm very smart. I know what the hell's going on. He can't force me to do this. I do believe that Jude probably would have won that argument.
I'm surprised that Jude didn't sue him over a HIPAA violation.
Right?
I mean, the amount of times that
He
Andy
told
would go and
Willem.
tell Willem something,
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Willem would just be like, "What? He didn't
Yep.
tell me this." And then he would immediately go and tell Jude and confront him. And I was just like, "Wow, it's a good thing he's not his official patient because he would definitely be up for a lawsuit already." On that same subject, like I spent probably half this book just trying to diagnose Jude, I feel
What'd you
like.
come up with? Did you come up with anything?
Well, see, and I didn't know he had actually been in an accident. Like, I was starting to think that it was something from one of his, like, it was just long term, initially thinking maybe it could be HIV. You know, as we were getting flashbacks into his past, we knew he was sexually abused. And I was like, okay, so maybe he has some kind of, you know, STDs that are compiling or have been untreated for so long because he doesn't go to a doctor other than Andy. And, you know, he's very private with even with Andy to tell him about, you know, anything that's going on. So I was like, for a good majority of the book, I thought that that's what it was.
I am in the camp where it was some nerve damage. That Dr. Trailer dude who like kept him in the basement,
Yeah.
he remember at the end of that episode, the way that he was released. I remember it was like one of the most sadistic things to do to a human being. The
Yes.
Dr. Traylor, he had Jude as a captive. This was when Jude was like a teenager running away from Brother Luke. He runs away. And Dr. Traylor finds him, takes him, and keeps him in the basement. And then when he's letting Jude go, finally, he lets him go into this empty field. And the Dr. Traylor is in his car chasing Jude while Jude is running barefoot in like the middle of winter. And it ends up being that the end of that situation is Dr. Traylor runs Jude over with his fucking car.
Yep.
With his fucking car. So I think it's definitely some like truly horrible nerve damage that is constantly causing Jude horrible, horrible pain. Like, we have to just talk about his childhood with him being in this monastery. First of all, his parents drop him off in front of this monastery, which at the end of the day is not it's not the worst decision if you're not going to go through the official routes of doing the adoption to dropping him off at a church or a religious place. I guess that's what people did back in the day. The monastery that Jude ended up at might have been the worst monastery in the history of all of monasteries.
It really was.
He gets like physically abused. And I want to, again, read you guys a quick quote about just how bad some of this abuse was. And it's not going to be any of the sexual stuff, because we could just say he was sexually abused. We don't have to talk about those details. Okay, so this is the quote. Sometimes he was hit hard enough so that he lost consciousness, which is what he began to crave. Listen to that again. Sometimes he was hit hard enough so that he lost consciousness, which is what he began to crave, that blackness, where time passed and he wasn't in it, where things were done to him, but he didn't know it. He craved the times where he was hit so hard he lost consciousness, because at least he didn't have to witness or be there when they were doing the things they were doing to him. That is the kind of abuse that Jude was dealing with from the monastery. The flashback in the monastery. So we could just talk about the monastery and his time with Brother Luke. How did you get through reading those parts of Jude's past?
What got me the most is that it wasn't just one person. And it was almost like it wasn't even a coordinated abuse. It was like all these random people decided to abuse him. It almost felt like Jude was like a magnet for abuse. Like he constantly, I mean, it was people who knew nothing about his past, and all of a sudden they're abusing him the same way that he was abused in the past. It was just very, very surprising that the same thing would keep happening. You know, when we started at the monastery, I was like, oh, so that's where his trauma comes from. But it's just the tip of the iceberg.
Exactly.
I did not know where it was going. I was just like, oh, wow, this is really sad. Like, this is really hard to get through. You know, that I understand now why he's so traumatized. And little did I know it was just going to get so much worse.
So much worse. So at the monastery, I feel like there was like, I don't want to say like an understanding, but an understanding between the brothers, or whatever you call them, the monks, because it said that they were beating him constantly for all of these little mishaps that would have. He did literally one thing wrong the entire time he was there, where he had like a sticky finger error when he was a little kid, where he would steal little knickknacks here and there. But then he stole one of the brothers' like hairbrush or something, some like sacred object for one of the brothers. And that's when the beatings went from bad to like lose consciousness bad. There's actually another quote that I was going to read where one of the brothers, I think this was actually Brother Luke, after they left the monastery, put some oil on Luke's hand and then used the cigarette to burn that skin, which was fucking insane. And he would do it up and down the legs. And what you said was so right. It's like seeing like an innocent person who doesn't know how to care for, not doesn't know, doesn't understand what like true love is, because he was so gullible because he knew nothing else. He knew mm-hmm. nothing else. At the monastery, he's getting abused. He's getting abused. He's getting abused. He sees Brother Luke as the super kind one of the brothers, because he's the only one that doesn't sexually abuse him at the monastery, and he's the only one that doesn't physically harm him at the monastery. So then he's like, what's the word that they use for the grooming? He's like grooming
yes.
him to think, he's grooming him to think that I'm the good guy. I'm the good guy. I'm the good guy. You can come plant flowers with me. I'll get you some cookies. You can have an extra box of apple juice with me. And then little does he know, he's like, okay, so you're gonna run away with me. This is a kid like 8, 9, 10 years old that doesn't know anything about except the fact that everyone else in this monastery is abusing me, except for this one man who's showing me some true kindness. I'm going to follow this man. And what Brother Luke does to him is he uses Jude as a prostitute, as an underage prostitute for all of these men throughout the, like, I don't know, is it the South? He goes like to Texas and then he goes up to Oregon and then Washington State and then like Montana, wherever the fuck they end up. But he goes throughout all of these states living in motels and having just random men come in and have sex with Jude every single day of his life. And the promise that Brother Luke gives Jude is like, when you turn 16, that's when we'll finally have the cabin in the woods together. And that entire backstory is just so hard to read. It's just so hard to sit with Jude in that situation. The fact that he starts throwing his body up against the wall for the little bit of pain, Brother Luke is the person who shows Jude how to start cutting himself and why it feels good to cut himself. And it's just, it's so sadistic. It's so sick. It's hard to understand that these are the kind of things that people actually do.
That was the first glimmer of hope I had for Luke, for Jude, and I was like, oh yeah, he's gonna go with Brother Luke and they're gonna get a place together and finally this guy's gonna adopt him, and I was just not worried at all about the present or about what was going
Exactly.
on there. I was just like, oh yay, he's finally got his person. And then the first time Brother Luke mentioned something about a person coming in and Jude being a prostitute, I was befuddled. I could not understand because I was like, wait, this is supposed to be the good person. What is going on here? And then Brother Luke ends up being just as bad and convincing Jude that they're in love when he's like, I think 15 or 14 or something. And, convincing him that this is what love is. This is how people act when they're in love. And I was like, wow, that's such a twisted way. I mean, Brother Luke really like premeditated this preying on Jude. He was looking at a long-term sadistic plan, is what he was doing.
Like truly maniacal, like horrible. Brother Luke gets caught because some cops come and bust through the door. And then Brother Luke runs to the bathroom, locks the bathroom door, and hangs himself because he knows he's getting thrown under the jail. He's like death sentence, like he's worst human being possible, like just worst person possible, right? But what you said, Piper, is so hard to hear, but is so true because Jude knows nothing else. And like the entire time, Jude is thinking, well, Brother Luke is still good to me. Because he's not as mean to me as the dudes that come by here to have sex with me. He sits in the bathroom, and if any of these guys come by and they do something that is considered to Jude as like over the line, then Brother Luke comes in and saves the day. That, you guys, that is Jude's version of a good person. Like, when we then fast forward to Jude's present day life and his like keeping people away because he doesn't know what love is. He doesn't understand how to be friends with people. He knows that if someone gets too close, if he allows someone in, that they're gonna break him apart. And then we have to now talk about Caleb. At present day, he's living his life. He's a lawyer. He's like, things are happening for him. He's in a good place. And then finally this guy comes up and he's like, I like you, you're attractive, you're this, all of these things. He gets into a relationship with Caleb. And then the first time you notice that Caleb is kind of a fucking asshole is when Caleb notices that Jude limps and he's like disgusted at the fact that Jude limps. Caleb abuses Jude when he first sees him in a wheelchair because he's embarrassed at the fact that he's with Jude and Jude is crippled. That is the first time that Caleb abuses Jude. And then it gets so bad at the end of Caleb's and Jude's relationship where he like beats him to a pulp to the point where like he has to go into the hospital and he has to be hospitalized for like multiple weeks, if not months.
I was still optimistic at the point where even Caleb was like saying, well, I don't want to see you in your wheelchair and I don't want to see you using, crutches and all that. I was still hoping for the best at that
Right?
point. I was still
Right?
like, because they kind of explained it that Caleb, wasn't it that Caleb had like a relative or someone who
I think
was
his mom,
disabled.
yeah, his mom was disabled.
And
I
so
think,
for him, it was like
yeah.
he felt like it was traumatic to see a
Yeah,
person
exactly.
in that way again. And I was almost like, oh, well, that's sad. And like, they'll get through this. They can figure it out. Like, he's going through his own struggles, and Jude is also going through his struggles, but they can figure it out together. And then it just got worse from there on, and I was so shocked.
I don't think Caleb picked Jude because he knew something was off and something like he could be his like crazy, like abusive self with Jude. So I had this highlighted because I didn't know if I was going to mention it or not, but this is Harold's perspective on what's going on with Caleb and Jude. That had been one of Harold's arguments when he was trying to get him to report the attack. And this is the attack that Caleb does on Jude, that Caleb was dangerous, and that by reporting him, by having him arrested, he would be protecting other people from him. But he had known that wasn't true. And this speaks to the point that you're trying to decipher right now. Caleb wouldn't do to other people what he did to him. He hadn't hit and hated him because he hit and hated other people. He had hit and hated him because of who Jude was, not because of who Caleb was. The lashing out that Caleb did to Jude was because he was surprised that he was attracted to someone that was so broken, right? So when he found out that Jude was in a wheelchair, was crippled, right? And there was the scene where it was the first time that they had Caleb and Jude had sex, but most of the time it was in the dark. And it was this one time where Caleb saw Jude in some kind of light, and he was like disgusted at seeing Jude in the light with all of his scars. And like, it's so crazy to think, but like, that was like the most raw Jude was with someone. He like that Jude was willing to show someone this, and then he was truly disgusted, and that already pushed Jude further back into not wanting to see anyone him naked again. But I think that was it. Like, he was surprised that he could be attracted to someone so broken, and that's why he lashed out so hard, is at least the way I read it.
Do you think that if like Willem had expressed before Caleb that he was attracted to Jude, do you think that their relationship would have been better? And
Oh.
maybe Jude wouldn't have been so traumatized with them having sex without Caleb most recently having abused him?
The thing is, they were describing Jude as like he thought that sex was a must in a relationship. So he always thought that I have to do this because I am with someone romantically. And this is just a part of what being in a romantic relationship feels like. I think there would have been hope at the end of the tunnel where Jude would have been like, okay, I think I can somewhat enjoy sex, maybe, but I am leaning towards no. I'm leaning towards Jude probably, I don't want to say shouldn't have sex, but like until he like true therapeutic help on like his past, I don't know if sex is a healthy thing for Jude to be doing, just because his entire history was sexual abuse at its like pinnacle of like abuse. I don't know. I don't think the sex part would have been, good, but I think the relationship would have been much, much easier to get into and to form because we didn't know that much about Caleb outside of the fact that he was charismatic and he was interested in Jude in a
Yeah.
sexual way and the only person to do so like obvious.
I almost wonder if like Jude being with Caleb is what pushed Willem to start wanting to be with Jude. Because
Oh,
at
yeah.
that point he realized like, well, even, I can't even trust that he's gonna find a romantic partner that won't abuse him, but I can be the one who won't abuse him. So I almost wonder if that's kind of part of what sparked Willem's beginnings of thinking of Jude in that
And
way.
more what Piper, you're such a good reader. You're so, of course you're right, because the entire time I remember specifically now that Willem had multiple like monologue thinking like sections in the book where he was like, I'm pretty sure Jude's just asexual because I've never seen him like talk
Yeah.
about anyone else in a romantic way ever in my entire time knowing the guy. And
Yeah.
like there have been multiple people in the past in like college that were interested in Jude that Jude just didn't even consider because his mind was never there. So I think in Willem's mind, Jude was asexual. And then when he found out that he was in a relationship with Caleb, maybe that he was like, okay, bingo, I there's a possibility.
I mean, Willem could have had a small spark of like jealousy, even, where he was like, you know, if you were to think that your best friend who you're their only person in life, you know, is asexual and is, you know, you're always going to be their number one person. But then when he goes and he actually has a relationship with someone else, Willem might have been like, oh, wait, I'm not always going to be his number one person. So maybe I should put myself in the place to be his number one person because that's actually what I want.
And this is a perfect segue. You're so good at this, Piper. Perfect segue to wrapping this up. And I did want to read this last quote from the book, which is one of my favorite quotes because it's finally some good things happening to Jude in an extended period, not just a quick reprieve of him like getting a good job and then meeting Caleb. It's like truly extended periods of good time that's happening for Jude. And this is after Willem and Jude get together. Almost every summer, he thinks this is the best summer. But this summer, he knows, really is the best. And not just the summer, the spring, the winter, the fall. As he gets older, he's given increasingly to thinking of his life as a series of retrospectives, assessing each season as it passes as if it's a vintage of wine, dividing years he's just lived into historical eras, the ambitious years, the insecure years, the glory years, the delusional years, the hopeful years. This is describing Willem thinking, but it is describing the relationship that he is with Jude. And we can wrap up the book review with the fact that Jude and Willem end up together after Caleb, after all of the horrible stuff. We talked about the weird situation with them at the sex. But then Willem does die in the car crash. It just says that Jude disappears. It's not, they don't find, there's no body, right? They don't know where Jude is, or is there a body? Like I think he just disappears.
Well,
Or
I
does he
thought,
actually kill, like, cut himself to the point of bleeding out and dying?
yeah, I'm pretty sure he actually commits suicide because he leaves a note for Harold and his other friends, the few friends, you know, that he has left at this point.
He
And
divvies up his money and everything, yeah.
I also felt like that was the other, because like right after this point was when JB also came up to Jude and then like tried to hit on him basically. And at that point, I was like, I am so done with this
JB's
whole
bullshit.
thing. I was like, I am so done with this book. It's almost over. What is gonna happen? And I mean, how did you feel about basically all of his friends trying to, I mean, they were basically begging Jude every single day to not do anything to himself.
We live on the fact that like we're our profession is to help people in their darkest hour. Our profession is to take care of people. But like the key thing here is, and when I was talking about Andy, I like it's the crystallizing point. You can't help someone who doesn't want to help themselves. And it's impossible, literally impossible, to help someone who's trying to hurt themselves. At the end of the book, after Willem's death, it's literally just a cycle between people being by Jude's side to make sure that he's not committing suicide. They have this whole plan out where he has to go, like he finally has to go to a therapist. And if he doesn't go to the therapist appointments, he'll be in a psychiatric ward, like all of these things that he has to do or else. And that's no way of living a life. But at the same time, if you love someone, what else can you do? It's just a rock and a hard place is my like position of the book after Willem's death, because it's like Jude doesn't want to live. He doesn't want to continue living. And everyone in his life is like, we love you so much. Please take better care of yourself. Like, and he makes it, I think, to the first year. He makes it through the first year to the anniversary of Willem's death. And then Harold and Jude and Harold's wife take a vacation. And like, that's the last time Harold ever sees Jude. It's truly so sad because it's like, because I can't see, I don't want to say a happier ending for Jude, or I can't see Jude growing into being a happier person without Willem. And if that is what his goal was, that is what his goal was. And I'm just saying this because I am a believer in euthanasia. So like if you feel like you're living in a situation where it's truly horrible and you want to call it quits, obviously with the doctor's help and you're in the right state of mind, not that you're like schizophrenic and decide one day that you don't want to be around. Just a long way of me saying, if that's what he wanted after living the life that he did, after having that little bit of happiness, that truly great summer, I'm like, okay, that's what you want to do. And I don't
I
know if that's
mean,
fucked
yeah.
up.
Well, towards the end of the book, I was kind of like, okay, everybody just leave him alone. Just let
Exactly.
him, just let him do his thing. Like he's gonna do what he's gonna do. But then I was still just so mad when he actually did
Exactly.
do it. I was so mad. I was like, well, that just dashed my last hope at him having a good life. And I was so angry because, which I mean, is kind of probably how all of his friends felt and everything. They were constantly trying to help him just for him to go and leave them. And so I'm sure that that was very similar, feeling just to be so angry and disappointed at the same time. But it also made you very empathetic of people going through that struggle because,
100%.
especially with a life like his, one of the what I would hope is more rare
100%.
lives,
I'd hope so,
So
at least, yeah.
it's, yeah, I really hope so. But because his life was so filled with trauma and constant betrayals, other than that one year, which took a lifetime of friendship to build up to just that one year of total trust and happiness. So
Exactly.
he knew there was no way that he was going to build that level of trust and happiness with another person because
Exactly.
he was already more than halfway through his lifetime. So I feel like at that point, it wasn't going to get happier for him other than complacency. And I even was struggling with the, okay, well, but like nothing's good without Willem. I was so sad.
It's
And I was just like,
yeah.
Willem's gone. There's nothing, there can't be anything now. Like it's not going to get better. And, but I was really just hoping that he would learn to live with complacency for the sake of Harold and all the other people that loved him, and that he would, understand that though he was struggling and he struggled every single day, I was really hoping that he would endure, I guess, the struggle to, which really just kind of is more like what he went through his whole life, which was, endure the struggle to benefit others.
And the
And
thing is,
so he
just
kind of ended that cycle.
and like the thing is, it's like Malcolm also died. The thing is, it's like Malcolm was the other friend in the friend group that that Jude like trusted, and then like he was left with JB. And it sounds shitty though the way I say left with JB, but JB's the one friend in the friend group that he had that super bad tension with, number one. And then number two, the thing that sucked is in the book, this was at the same like after Willem died. Andy goes and tells Jude, but Andy has to because what is Andy going to lie to him? But Jude, Andy's like, I'm retiring, so you need to find a different doctor. And Jude's like he's like, the one human being I trusted dies in a car accident. My other friend that I trusted was just being a friend died in that same car accident. The only person that I trust to look at me naked is telling me that I need to find another doctor. Fuck this, I'm out. He's like,
Yes,
I'm
it was
out.
like the straw
The
that
straw
broke
that
the
broke the
camel's
camel.
back.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was exactly like that. 'Cause it, I mean, he only had five people that
In
he
his life?
really was okay with and trusted and was willing to confide, not even really confide in, but as much as Jude did. And so I feel like, when three of those people all are leaving his
Gone, son.
life, he was
He's
like,
like,
why am I still here? When, especially when he thought he would be the first one. That was his
exactly.
entire life, was thinking, okay, well, I'll be the first to
I'm
go,
gonna
so it doesn't
die.
matter.
Sniper, you're so good. Okay, you're so good. So I really hope you guys leave all the comments in the comment section. Let Piper know she should be back. Piper, thank you so much for this. The last question I ask is for the millennial classics on this on my podcast on the YouTube channel. We mainly do movies and TV shows. I wanted to the question I ask whenever reading a great book. Do you want to see this book turn into a TV series, a HBO limited series, or a movie? Or do you think that this is made and can only be perfectly done in a book? How do you feel about this becoming something bigger?
This would be a very, very hard show or movie to watch, even more so. And I feel like it would be really, I mean, just even the technical side of it, like funding something that is so insanely traumatic for a lot of people would be really hard to do. And I think that I feel like this does a good job at not having so much inner monologue that it would be impossible to make into a production.
Oh,
But
yeah.
I think that there are some internal struggles that would be hard to convey, like such as them struggling with their sexuality. That would have to be like, like a voiceover or something of the
Exactly.
thoughts in their head. There's no way that, someone's going to sit in a room and talk to themselves and be like, well, do I like women or do I like men? I don't know. I've never
Would be
been
so
with a
mean on
man,
TV. Yeah.
So I feel like that a lot of the character development would be missed if it was put into a show.
You're right. Just because a lot of it happens internally. And when you have books with heavy internal monologues or internal like prose, it's very hard to have that be on screen. And on top of it, like we watch HBO and they have like all of these crazy action shows that have like crazy sex scenes, but the entire show, the entire movie would be sexual abuse. And who the
Yes,
fuck wants to watch that? We don't want that
exactly.
on screen.
It would be
Reading.
that. It would be physical abuse. It would be
Yeah.
drugs. I mean, the whole thing would be mostly highlighting that, and there would be very, very little sparks of happy spots, which is how the book is. But I feel like that would be so hard to watch, especially without the internal monologues of like even like Jude saying to himself that, oh, brother Luke isn't that bad because he doesn't hit me,
Exactly.
that would be really hard to
Hard to.
convey on a show.
It
I
would
feel
be.
like you
It
need
would
the
be.
book.
Piper, I mean, I asked for 2 hours and we're 2 minutes over, but you've been such a goddamn champ. Thank you so much, so much, so much, so much. Please
Course.
tell the folks where they can find you.
Right now I'm just on TikTok and Instagram as Nurse Pips, which is NURSEPIPS. And I'm on both of those things. I'm kind of spotty, but I'm working on it. That's my part of my New Year's
She's very,
resolution.
listen, her version of spotty is consistency compared to me. So if you're listening to this, you're gonna love her consistency. All
I
of the
hear my
links
stories are really good, though. People love
are
my
truly,
Instagram stories.
truly. Her story is actually how I noticed her reading this book. And then I went away to ask her to join us. So please, please, please go check her out. Go follow her. Thank you so much for doing these 2 hours. I'm talking about one of the toughest books I've read in probably ever.
Yeah, I
And the
probably that'll be the last one that I get that's, a good cry book.
I think, I mean, like if you do want to come back and talk about Atomic Habits, the next book Piper is going to do with me is going to be much more uplifting. It's going to be so positive, it'll
Yes, that
blow
would
your
be way
mind.
more motivational, and I think I'll be so inspired by that one. This book, I keep telling people, and I'm like, it just stabbed me right in the hope every single time. Every single time. And I'm like, if you don't like books like that, then don't read it.
Yeah.
But if you want to, it is good for a good cry. If you really want an emotional book, and if you want to feel how grateful you can be for all the
Yes.
little things in your life, this is a good book for that. Because afterwards, I was like, wow, I am so thankful for my health. I'm so thankful to be able to walk every day. I'm so
Yep.
thankful to have people that love me unconditionally. And just to have experienced trauma like that, like it will really make you happy for all the little things in your life if you read this book.
I'm gonna 1000% steal what you just said. I mean, I think it's a perfect quote. Stab you right in the hope. I love that line.
Yes.
I love that line. I love that line. Piper, good night. Thank you so much, and I'll catch you when I catch you. Thank you, thank you.
Okay, no problem. I hope your little one sleeps good tonight.
Bye-bye.
Bye.